the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm Lisa Anderson here with you. And also to remind you that, gasp, we are 1 month away from Pursuit 2015 at this point. So that is scary, but it's also super awesome because the weather has taken an amazing turn here in Colorado. And want you to know, July 9th through 11th, right here at Focus on the Family's headquarters. But registration ends Monday, June 22nd. So that is an even shorter time frame. We're talking like a couple weeks for y'all to still get registered. So you want to hop over to boundless.org/pursuit. Again, boundless.org/pursuit and get registered. Grab a friend. Come on out here and make it a fun weekend in the Colorado Rockies. Well, later on in the show, we're going to have Candace here to basically give the women an FYI on how to tell guys you're not interested. That can be a very sad, hurtful situation. So hopefully this is a listener who wants to know how to do it, and Candace is going to weigh in. Then for our culture, I'm excited to have Ryan and Amanda Leak here. If you saw their YouTube video, as did about 27 million other people, you know that they got both engaged and married on the same day. Is that possible? Was it like, what is up with that? Why did that happen? And what has kind of happened since then in their story? So this is going to be a fun conversation that I have with them. But here I am with also fun individuals. I have Jenny, Glenn, and Macy here. Hey, guys.
Hello. Hi.
Hey.
Great to have you. We're going to be talking about, speaking of dating, and I'm not going to make any of you guys say, you know, oh, I got engaged and married on the same day. But we're going to talk about the timeline of dating and the numbers of dating, I guess. So what is, you know, we hear from people who have this idea in their head that it is most ideal to meet that one person that you're supposed to marry and then date only them, be engaged to only them, and marry only them. But there are many others who think that you should date a number of people so you truly have a smorgasbord of opportunity and that you can choose who would be the best fit for you. So we're going to just take the gloves off. Everyone here is representing a different position, a different experience. And we're going to have a fun conversation around this. So,
yeah, that first one is crazy. Let's just mark that one off.
The first one is crazy, and that's why Glenn's going to talk about it, because that's his story. I want to start out, though, by asking, back before you were dating anyone, what were your assumptions about dating and marriage? Did you have, like, a parent or someone tell you what the ideal scenario is, or did you somehow get it into your head as to, I mean, did Cinderella tell you how this was going to go down? Did, I don't know, Glenn, who would have your person been, Zorro? Or like, what happened with him? He just knelt by people's graves.
Yeah, I'm the geezer. This would have been in the late 70s. So it was Tonto and... No,
he did not date.
That's a good question. It wasn't that big of a thing back then.
Okay,
you know,
no one was like overanalyzing it. Like,
yeah, it was
now.
Earlier before that. I mean, it was the expectation. If you're going to become an adult, you're going to get married. In the 70s, it was like it just wasn't really talked about because, like, you know what? Do whatever you want to do.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So what would you say your personal experience was growing up? What was in your head as far as how this was going to play out?
Gosh, I think that I kind of thought, this is how they taught us in youth group it was going to go. We were going to sit next to one another. Mm-hmm. We were going to like the same things. We were going to be running to Jesus. We would be looking over at the person sitting next to us. We'd grab hands, and then we'd run to the altar.
Okay.
It didn't happen like that.
Not, okay, yeah. I will tell you it did not happen for me that way either. Okay.
Yeah, so what did you guys do wrong?
So many things, yeah.
Some people were running in opposite directions from us. That's the problem.
Yeah. There was no sitting next to anyone of the opposite gender.
Uh-huh. My parents, they met in high school and got married right after college, so I kind of always assumed that's what happens. You know, you meet someone in high school and you go to the same college and get married. So I remember it's like I got farther and farther along in high school and I'm like, oh my goodness, I haven't met him yet. Like, how is this going to go? And then come to find out I did actually marry the person that I had a crush on in high school. But
okay. Well, it's not like you were in a big city either, right? Weren't you like in somewhere?
Yeah. Rural Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah.
With the Amish.
There were three guys to choose from.
With the Amish. Nice.
Yeah. Well, at least the Amish kind of get out there. I mean, but maybe only within their own community. So, yeah, I guess you were shut out.
Okay. Yeah.
You picked the one guy who was not named Elijah.
Yeah.
And then, so Glenn, what about your experience?
Jackie and I met in high school, and she was in the, I was in the 12th grade, she was in the 10th grade, she was 15, I was 17, and we got married right out of high school. In fact, she graduated, no, she turned 18 in July, and we got married in September. It was crazy, and we figured, you know what, you're 18, how much more of an adult can you be?
Well, apparently you figured that out in the first 10 years of marriage.
Right.
Maybe. Okay.
We did.
That's good. But there's something to be said for that, I think.
Yeah.
So, Macy, yours was a little bit different because you knew Austin in high school. But then what happened?
So, if you ask him, he says that I told him that I moved out of state and avoided him. But
But you didn't.
I didn't. It was a mess. So our friendship kind of dropped off, though, at the end of high school. And then we went to different colleges. He had a serious girlfriend all through college. And I had one boyfriend for about 3 months, probably. I broke up with him and then moved to China after college, was there. And just randomly started connecting through email, thanks to Facebook, saying that I was in China, and random conversation struck
up. So we figure that's kind of safe. You're in China. Yeah. You can at least just chat with you and not have any commitments. And that.
Yeah.
Did you date any nice Chinese boys?
I did not, no. Okay. I wouldn't have been able to talk much more than, this is the food I want.
That would have been.
I knew how to order at a restaurant. That's about it.
Yeah. Okay.
That's pretty impressive anyway.
Yeah. And then Jenny, how about you? Give us a little of your landscape.
Well, goodness, I guess I didn't get married until I was 39, and I didn't have my first date till I was 26. So I guess, I don't know, somehow I missed that boat in high school and college, and I don't really know how I did it, except for a serious, healthy fear that I was going to make the very absolute worst choice for my life. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was debilitating for me to even make friendships or have fun with it. So I think, and there were a lot of strong preachings in our youth group about dating and how to do that right. And I just was overwhelmed by even making any kind of a small mistake, going to coffee with the wrong one.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Too many soul ties, you know? Right. I don't know how many of you all heard about soul ties in youth group, but
isn't that like Larry Crabb? I think he has a book.
Oh, it might be. Soul
ties. Yeah.
I was going to make soul ties with my
too
many
people. On the show coming up. I'll have to ask him about that. Are you single-handedly responsible for unnecessary soul ties between dating young adults?
See, the part of that, though, is crazy. I mean, just overthinking it.
Totally.
And that was so big in the church of thinking, okay, you had to get all these different angles just right before. I mean, life doesn't work that way.
But it kind of seemed to work that way for some of the people around me. I was like, oh, they're sitting next to one another. 3 months later, they're engaged. 3 more months later, they're married. So apparently it worked for some of them.
Yeah, but prior to that, in all human civilization among the Christian church, did you have just, these millennia of disasters, right?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because we get questions from people that are should I go out with this person? Just going out with them is going to put them down some course that is not retractable. I think there really is this idea that you could actually make those kind of minor decisions and have them become monumental. That's interesting. Now, I would be interested in finding out, now looking back on the other side of your stories, because you all are married now, is there anything that, first of all, did you have any doubts or second guessing about, Macy, for example, should you really just commit to Austin from the get-go, or would it, or maybe, you thought before marrying him, I don't know, maybe I should date a few more guys just to chat, just for a comparison, for a sample, an accurate sample. I don't know, Glenn, if you would have, you were so young, you were probably, Glenn's shaking his head.
I didn't know any better. But no, for me, it was you know what? No, this is it. I can't imagine my life without her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, that goes back to overthinking it, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. This is her. Now, she wasn't perfect. Mm-hmm. I wasn't perfect, but you know what? We were two human beings getting married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say when, like, that's how I felt when Austin and I started dating officially. I pretty much knew kind of like, this is it, this fits, this works. And so now looking back to high school and being like, well, I wish I could have had my mind made up by then mm-hmm. so that both of us could have not, I know we didn't date a whole lot of people, but mm-hmm. so that we didn't even have to walk that path. Mm-hmm. And then I think it would have been great had we not had to date other people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Jenny, what about you? Like, looking back and realizing, okay, so you finally met Jean, but anything learned or any regrets from the history of dating?
I kind of wish I would have started earlier. I kind of wish that it wasn't so much thinking, that mm-hmm. there was more freedom in that and more trying to learn how to develop friendships and just have a good time. Mm-hmm. I think, other than that, I don't think I really have any regrets. I think maybe if a few too many online profiles are out there still that I can't even remember how to mm-hmm. get rid of. But
are you getting any interest from those?
No. I changed my email address. I mean, that's pretty effective, right?
Oh, yeah, that should be.
I would say, though, too, while I wish that I would have had my mind made up in high school, I don't regret. Like, I don't think it's a mistake that I dated someone else, though, and mm-hmm. don't think that's a bad thing mm-hmm. to have done.
Mm-hmm. Well, experience is never bad. I mean, in right. the sense of, you know, within reason.
Yeah.
I actually kind of think that I learned a lot more about myself and what I was hopeful for, and kind of narrowed down and defined. Because also in youth group, we were given like this, we were supposed to make this list of things that we wanted in a person. Mm-hmm. And I think that through the years, that kind of got a little bit more refined as I dated other people and learned that some things weren't as important as others. And mm-hmm. And I also got older, so that also refined things.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I realize how, and it's funny because I think to myself, here I grew up with great examples of marriages around me and, you know, had a very good script on marriage and what you should expect. But when it came to practically applying it to my life, I realized that I made a lot of assumptions about my own ability to be discerning, which I think ended up not being correct. And so mm-hmm. I was, you know, and I've talked about this before, especially moving into my 30s, giving way too many chances, you know, going out dating for a length of time, guys who probably I had no business dating and stuff. So kind of looking at that and realizing, because people will make the argument of, well, you know, you should do a lot of practice dating to learn how to communicate and to learn how, you know, learn how to socialize with different personalities or whatever. And I'm kind of like, can't you just do that by like getting to know people in general? Do you really have to get your heart involved? So I'm a little bit leery of that. So it is interesting because I think, but to that point, I will say that had I married any of those guys early on, I would have been in for a world of hurt. So I think that was a very good thing in as to winnowing the list of qualifications and what's really important.
Yeah.
That was super, super helpful for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whereas Glenn, you more so just walked through the rough edges, you know, together mm-hmm. and kind of had to, you know, polish and sanctify in the process of growing up, probably.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Lisa, I think another example there, which we really don't have in, you know, like classic evangelical teaching, but I've seen it within our relationship and I've seen it among friends, is one of the most significant things, one of them, is extended family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you got to look at where they came from, where the soil was, because that's going to be a huge thing in terms of what this person turns out to be, you know, mm-hmm. later in life. And so that's just as important of making sure that you, mm-hmm. you know, did all the dating steps just right.
Yeah, no, that's good. What do you think, I mean, as far as like evaluating the culture where it is now, and even, you know, Glenn, you're one of our marriage and family researcher here at Focus. And then just experientially, Jenny and Macy, where is our culture right now that we feel I mean, because it used to be, you know, my parents' generation previous to that, everyone was just kind of in the same spot, you know, with values and what they really believed and where they wanted to go in life. And now it feels like you're entering some like gauntlet, you know, of you're on American Ninja Warrior or something. And if you can make it through the course, then more power to you. But, you know, what do you think is playing into all these ideas of, you know, I have to know this or I have to have sampled the entire buffet beforehand versus there's still a high courtship contingency out there, too, that's just like, bam, you should be able to pick and get it done. I mean, where are those attitudes coming from?
I'm not really sure exactly overall for the whole culture, but I think my dad was pretty emphatic with me that he didn't want me to go to a Christian college because he didn't want me to go there to get my MRS degree. I did maybe bring that up a few times after I had my regular Bachelor of Arts degree and no MRS degree for like 20 years. So I do kind of think that my dad's experiences with his friends in his little community who went to Bible college and then got divorced later really impacted his thinking on what he was going to let his kids do and how he was going to direct them. And I'm the oldest, so I got to be practiced on for that. So I think for me, that was... I don't know if that's really true across the culture, but that's kind of what happened, I think, in our family.
Yeah, I would agree. My parents got divorced, and so I remember just when my dad remarried, a lot of what he said was like, yo, you know, take your time, kind of that idea of, like, date around, you're not sure if this is the one, and it's more him saying, like, well, I wasn't sure, so you might not be sure. So I think just the culture of divorce has really shaped the dating atmosphere of not being like not wanting to have to get divorced. And so then it's like, well, that fear of choosing the wrong person.
I make it easy for my daughters. I have four daughters and I'll just say, I'll let you know when the right one comes along. That'll just make it easy. But no, I think in the general culture, they are completely scriptless. There's just no script whatsoever. Ironically or curiously, in the evangelical community, we have these crazy competing scripts, and they are very detailed, and, you know, we can tend to think, I mean, like we've said here, if we mess up on them in any way, then, oh my goodness, you know, we're just jettisoned out in space, free of God's, you know, will and knowledge, and, you know, you think about, you know, this just hit me, read biographies of Billy and Ruth Graham. Think about how they met one another. You know, the you know, other people like that in relatively recent history, and see how they did it. I mean, we know here Dr. Dobson and Shirley, you know, how did they do it? And it's like they didn't overthink it. They did it in a very godly way, but it was, they went by a script, but it wasn't this kind of nailed down point by point kind of script. And again, if you miss it, then, you know, God says you're on your own. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, because you mentioned your daughters, I would love to know what your vision for them is. I mean, knowing the way that you did it, do they have the expectation that they're going to do it the same way? Or, and how do you reconcile yourself to that?
Well, it's interesting because we have boy and girl twins. They just graduated from high school, and they're 18. And I'm like, man, we got married when we were 18. It's like, no way. And then our oldest daughter is 21, and they are just focused on what they want to do. And it's, you know, our 21-year-old daughter, she wants to go into ministry, and she would love to get married, but it's like, here's where I'm going. And, you know, she's like, you know,
she's got to look for that person on the pony next to
her,
I guess.
But, you know, she, I think she's got a very healthy view in the sense of, you know what, that'll happen. And I'm not looking for that guy, but nor am I closed off either. She wants to go out and live her life, and that's probably where she'll find her, you know, her, her husband. And, you know, the Sophie, the 18-year-old, she's the same way. But they also want to do it in line with us as well. Like, you know, we have something to say. I have something to say as the father about what I think is a good man or what is not a good man.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's hard. You know, it's a, I'll hear often from 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds, who think that they're just ancient history. You know, they're like, they'll come up to me in tears. I haven't met anyone. I haven't dated seriously. I'm not married yet. And I just feel like saying, ah, honey, literally, like, here's my story. And, you know, so I think there's a little bit of angst related to that. But at the same time, I don't want people to get overly. I mean, my story was like, of course I'm going to get married someday. And now I look back and I'm like, okay, so I didn't. So, you know, always, you know, keeping marriage in mind and walking out there as well and saying, yeah, I'm definitely open to it. Mm-hmm. I think that's good. So, well, you guys, thank you very much. We hardly even scratched the surface on this conversation, but good thoughts. Of course, all of y'all out there, we'd love to hear what your experience has been or what your assumptions are about dating and the path and the numbers game as it plays out. With dating and marrying that one person that you meet or, you know, dating many people. So hop over to the blog and let us know what you think on that. But thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've heard it said that music heals the soul, but I have sung a thousand songs and they never made me whole, until I joined the holy chorus that started long ago. Though it carried me a while, still so many miles to go. So help this broken man when the road, write in me a melody so I can sing redemption songs. 'Cause when push comes to shove, never be enough to make it on my own. No, help this broken man soul. Help this broken man soul.
Well, as we launch into our culture segment this week, I have a fun story to share with you. You may have already been tipped off to it because you might have seen a certain YouTube video. It involves Ryan and Amanda Leak basically getting engaged and married on the same day. I don't even know how. Okay, you guys, how many views are we up to on that at this point?
Oh, gosh.
1.3 million.
Okay. That's a lot. That is a lot of people that attended your wedding right there, vicariously. So that's pretty fun. As a result of the whole media storm that came about after that, I know you were on morning shows. You've done a lot of stuff. Just people who are like, how do you actually do that? Why did you come up with that? Really, it birthed a lot more to your own story. And then now you guys are authors of The One, An Amazing Love Story Starts With You. And now, how long have you been married now?
We have been married 2 years this Sunday.
Oh, my word. Coming up. And you are parents. So that's very exciting. Super.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes. 5 months.
Yay. Very fun. Well, I want to kind of kick it off. One of the things that I think is interesting in the book, and the book actually has a very small portion that talks about your wedding day and just kind of all the, you know, the hype and craziness around that, because obviously that story was told on video. What you really talk about a lot is what led up to that and kind of the journey, you know, in your relationship prior to that, as well as where you've come since then and advice that you have. But I want to start out by talking a little bit, because both of you mention in the book your histories and just patterns basically that you had or thought of going into both dating and marriage. And I want to talk about, like, what are those patterns that you definitely wanted to break, whether from your own parents' history, whether from your own past dating history? What was the vision you had of dating and marriage prior to even knowing each other?
Sure. Well, you know, if you never sit down with a counselor, if you never sit down with a mentor, then really you kind of naturally grab ideas about marriage and relationships from your parents or from aunts and uncles or, you know, whoever you grew up around. And so even sometimes subconsciously you carry that into a dating relationship or a marriage. And you have to kind of consider that the person that you are in a relationship with is also doing the same. And there's no way that you can come from exactly the same exact backgrounds. And so it kind of makes it complicated. And so for us, I know, you know, Ryan came from a home with three brothers and mom and dad at home. And I came from a single family home with my mom being a single mom. And one of the stories that I tell in the book is that Ryan and I, we, for the most part in our dating relationship, didn't get into really big arguments. Our argument style is not escalation. It's more kind of we go silent. So we've had a lot of silent car rides before. But one day in particular, we kind of got into it, and just my natural reaction was just to grab my keys, grab my purse, head downstairs, grab my car, and, you know, head back home. And I just remember driving home and just feeling so upset and so frustrated. And I can clearly remember where I was on the highway when it just kind of hit me that I was repeating the same patterns that I saw my parents have in their marriage. And so it was then that we decided that counseling would be really good for both of us separately and then together. So I think there's a lot of things that you wouldn't know that are deep down inside of you that really don't come to life until you're in a relationship with somebody else who doesn't view it the same way, which can be a really great thing in the long run for you to work on some of your issues. So yeah, I think, you know, we have a whole bunch more that we mentioned in the book, but two people coming together can be very complicated.
Sure. Okay. Anything to add on that point, Ryan, as far as, you know, even the differential of knowing what her past was? Did you have any fears about that, of knowing that she came from a broken home and how that would play into it?
No, not at all. You know, I think one of the things you have to consider in a relationship, especially when you're thinking about getting married to that person, is I think each person brings to a relationship their way. And we all have, like you said earlier, learned patterns of behavior that we've learned either from our family, people that we looked up to growing up. And each of us have a way of doing things. We have a way of cleaning our home. We have a way of cooking. We especially have a way of spending money or not spending money or saving money. And so you have to realize that no matter who you end up with, they're going to have a way. And I think one of the greatest things my mentor did for us is he wrote on a whiteboard, he wrote Ryan's way, and then in one circle, and then in another circle, he wrote Amanda's way. And then he drew a third circle, and he said, what you're looking for is our way. You're looking to create a new picture, not saying, hey, this is how my parents taught me, or this is the way we invested money, or this is the way I grow. We spanked this way, or public school, or private school. You can get into all of those different things, but when you're both saying, hey, what do we want our way to be? How do we want our child to be raised? How do we want our child to think about resources and finances and all of those things? I think you're not trying to win. You're not trying to get your way of resolving conflict. You're trying to get the best way for your family. And so I think you get to create a better picture when it's not about you in the picture.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Amanda, getting back to you, I know in the book you talk about going down to Atlanta to do an internship at a church there. And, you know, oh, surprise, you know, Ryan actually ended up showing up too. But yeah. But you actually told yourself that you were not going to date during this internship. Okay. And I want to, because we have got a collective sigh of people right now listening to the show that are like, okay, seriously, why is she putting these parameters on herself? Isn't that some weird, like, mystical experience of, like, you know, wearing a rabbit's foot and hoping that blah, blah, blah. But what was your motivation behind that? What did you hope to learn during that season?
Yeah, you know, during that year, the year prior, I was kind of interested in someone, and we were kind of dating. It was one of those, you know, it's complicated situations. And just kind of leaving that and leaving to a new place, I just decided that I was just going to give 1 year of just being single and whatever opportunity came my way, I was just going to do it. And kind of the premise of that was, you know, in our single life, we can, just because of the culture that we live in and the emphasis that's placed on falling in love, your single life can almost become about falling in love, about, you know, waiting for, in my case, Mr. Right to come along. And I just knew that I wanted to do things a little different. I knew that when Mr. Right found me, I wanted to be full of life, full of experience, and not just when we sat down on our first date looking at him and saying, oh, thank God, I've been waiting for you. Mm-hmm. I wanted him to sit down across from me and ask me what I have been doing that last year, or if that turned into 2 years or 3 years. But I knew for myself I needed to just set aside some time. I chose to make it a year just because I felt like that would be a healthy time to kind of heal from some past hurts and just to do some really cool things. And so I did. I was able to travel and meet new people and have new experiences. And coming out of that, I just remember thinking, I remember praying and just saying, okay, Lord, I'm at a place now where I'm so happy and content in my life that if it's just me and you from here on out traveling and having all these adventures, then I'm completely content in that. And then what do you know? Ryan Leek walks in the building. So
yeah,
it was a really good year for me, I would say.
Well, which is interesting because it's almost kind of this weird balance of like, I totally see what you're saying. And I'd actually like one of you to give a couple more examples of what a few of those things are that you think singles truly should be doing during their season of singleness. I know you talk about that in the book. But I also want to caution people like, you know, okay, yeah, so listen to what Amanda said. Then she realized that, okay, now I can get busy about considering marriage, whatever. Let's not prolong this into our 40s, people, okay, where you're just going off to Tibet, you know, indefinitely and whatever. So that said, for that season of singleness, maybe Ryan, you want to jump in here. What are a couple things that you truly think singles should be focusing on?
Absolutely. I think one of the things they definitely should do, even just for fun, is write out a bucket list. Mm-hmm. Write out some things that you always wanted to do that maybe you never could do. And then secondly, I think you should have some sort of God list. Like, what are some of the things that maybe God could do with you while you're single before you get a family, a household, and trying to manage some of those things? You know, we always share an example of one of our friends that actually, she's Miss Stilettos, she's Miss Life of the Party. She, whatever you think of when you think of a missionary, she's the opposite of that. And she has decided to take a year of her life and move to India. And she's working with a program that's helping kids read. She's teaching a professional basketball team Pilates. And she's doing things that she's never done before in her life. She's into music. She's teaching kids how to play piano. And, you know, she's been on some dates here in the States before. And she's single right now. And you know what's going to be interesting is when she does get back, probably about 9 months from now, you know, we see Amy getting on a date with somebody, and she has a story to tell. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we encourage singles to do is take a look at your story thus far, you know, whether you're 21 or 31. You know, what has been your story thus far, and what would you like to add to that story? Because you're in control of your story more than you think you are. If you say, hey, you know what, I want to backpack across Europe, well, you put your mind to it and you try to do that. Like, mm-hmm. you get to write your own story. The beautiful part is we live in America. Mm-hmm. We're free to do whatever we want to do. And if you work hard and you set your sights on a goal, a dream, well, so what if you fail? But at least your single years, you get a chance to try that. And so I know for me, on my end of singleness, before me and Amanda got married, you know, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I knew I wanted to be a business owner. And so I started a couple businesses, shut one down, and you get to do that. You get to figure out what has got put inside you. And that doesn't stop when you get married. It just gets to be carried over. But I got to test out a lot of things in those single years that I'm not able to do now, mm-hmm. In my married and parenting years, you know. Yeah,
that's good. All right. So meanwhile, you know, after this season, and of course, this is the counsel you're giving to singles, you two ended up meeting. You didn't really connect at the get-go for a number of reasons. But I want you to, maybe Amanda, you could tell it. This, I think it was actually a second date scenario. I can't remember what you guys did the first date, but this whole idea of Ryan planned this date where you were supposed to come up with 12 outfits. And I'm just like, what? Okay, this is going to just basically put all guys to shame who've ever tried to plan a date and stuff. But talk to us a little bit about you guys decided you were going to start getting to know one another. And Ryan basically like had his game on. And this was a day long date, right? That involved multiple, like he'd really planned it out.
Yeah. So actually our first date was kind of the opposite. He had had some plans that didn't go through, so we ended up at Wendy's eating spicy chicken sandwiches and just talking, and then I was really good friends with his brother and sister-in-law, and so we went and hung out over there. So the first date was actually extremely normal, which was nice because we just, you know, got to be honest and open and just kind of ourselves. But the second date, he was definitely very intentional. Our first date, we just felt like just this feeling of, man, I feel like we've known each other forever. And so he asked me to come to go on the second date. And of course, you know, I couldn't say yes right away. So I was like, yeah, you know, let me see, and text him later and said, yeah, I would love to. And so he said, okay, you'll need 12 outfits. And I asked him if I can get a hint of what we were doing. And he said, well, here's your hint. It takes a year to make a movie, but it only takes an hour or two to watch it. And so I ran to my apartment, and I had some friends living in the apartment underneath me. And I went into their apartment, and I was like, I need your cutest clothes in this bag right now. So they kind of helped me plan for these 12 outfits. And the next day when I got into the car, I was like, okay, you know, what are we doing? And he said, well, you know, we kept saying that we just felt like we knew each other forever. And so I just thought it'd be fun to make it look like we've known each other forever. And so we drove all over Atlanta, and we would just pick random spots and take a quick picture and then jump back in the car and change somewhere really quickly and then somewhere else. And so I still actually have the photo album today. We went to a carnival and took a picture on a Ferris wheel and just kind of some random spots that'll be great memories for forever for us. So yeah, he was extremely intentional. One thing about Ryan is that he listens. And so even with the surprise wedding, you know, everybody said, wow, you know, that's such a great idea that you had, Ryan. And, you know, we always remind people that that was actually an idea that I had that he listened to and made it happen. So you don't have to do something that extreme. And that's, you know, those are just some special occasions for us. That's not us on a normal basis. But I think the fact that he listened was huge.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, so then I would think, assuming, you know, listening to that story, we would say, wow, you know, they were really into each other. They clicked. They felt like they'd known each other forever. So obviously this was just, you know, this was just locked in. You guys just moved to marriage right away. But that's not the case. You actually dated for 5 years. And Amanda, you kind of attribute some of that to your mom's reaction to the relationship. Can one or both of you kind of speak to how that did shape the way the relationship progressed and had its stops and starts along the way?
Yeah. So like I said before, I come from a home with a single mom. And so anybody that's been raised with a single mom kind of knows that they play both roles, their mom and dad. So they're, you know, equally nurturing and protective. And so for my mom, who my family all lives in Chicago, she really didn't get to know Ryan right away because our relationship had started in Atlanta. And so when I came home and I was just kind of smitten with this, you know, guy that she had never heard of, I think she got really scared and kind of reverted back to some of the fears that she had about her story. And so it just started kind of a 5-year-long journey of just back and forth and trying to figure out how to honor my mom, but at the same time hold true to a relationship that I thought with Ryan would, you know, end up in marriage. And So we went back and forth about 5 years. We call it our limbo years. We were just kind of in limbo a few times. And, yeah, it was, you know, I'm not going to lie, it was a little bit exhausting at times. And there was definitely seasons of our life where we didn't see the outcome being very good for us as far as being in relationship. But, you know, a lot of people that watch the documentary, they see that there's that big moment where Ryan opens the doors and I'm just completely surprised and overwhelmed. And it's just a really exciting time. And I think that people that watch the documentary notice that I'm excited about the wedding day. But something that if you watch again, there's kind of a little a moment there with my mom. And so Ryan was just extremely diligent, and he knew that my mom had some fears, and so he would fly up to Chicago as often as he could towards the end of that 5 years, knowing that he wanted to marry me, just so that she can get to know him. And he completely honored her and respected her and just let her know that we wanted her to be a huge part of our lives, that we weren't taking that away, but at the end of the day, we had to do what we felt God was calling us to do. And so in the documentary, if you watch it again, there's a moment where my mom is standing there and I just lost it. It was definitely a miracle moment to have not only this amazing guy, but this amazing act that he's done for me. And then the cherry on top was my mom being there in approval. So now she's crazy about Ryan and can't get enough of her grandson. So
that's great.
It's been fun.
What, in light of that, knowing that this was a 5-year journey that was, like you said, limbo and stuff like that, is there anything, and Ryan, maybe you could speak to this because you're the, you know, you seem to be the planner and, like you said, entrepreneur, a guy who's going to look ahead, get it done, visionary. Anything you do differently in your dating season, looking back, like wisdom that you gleaned that you could share with people who are maybe dating and or moving towards marriage right now?
Absolutely. I think one of the best things that you could do is, you know, we talk about in our book about the idea of having a referee and seeking out counseling and that sort of thing. The one thing I wish we would have done more is I think we would have even done more than we already did. And I think we would have met with older couples more, would have tried to get dinner with them and talk through what the future might look like, because a lot of people learn marriage and parenting through the school of hard knocks. You learn the hard way. You learn by trial and error, you know, and every marriage is different and every baby is different. And so there are so many things that you just don't know until you experience, but that it doesn't have to be that way. I wish if we could go back, I simply would have asked more questions. A lot of times you sit down with a counselor or you sit down with an older couple and they just spit out advice. But when you're dating, you don't always even know what questions to ask. And I would encourage anybody to ask questions about what is to come. I would ask questions about how did you handle conflict? What was the hardest year of your marriage thus far, and how did you get through it? You know, things you don't think to ask now, or you might feel like, well, that's none of your business, but how they respond to that question could be something that saves your future relationship. And that's one of the things that I think if I could go back, I would have just asked more questions.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so last question here. We're going to wrap it up. And of course, we're going to encourage people to get the book and look at the documentary. So folks, you're going to see the link on our blog for both of those. But Amanda, you talk in the book about this whole idea for your wedding day, and you were casually mentioning to a friend that you would like to get engaged and married on the same day. And I think it was Ryan overheard that or got kind of the recon somehow. What in the world, why would that be a dream of yours? Where did that come from?
I know, it was a crazy idea. My friend that I was talking to, she's actually, she does wedding planning herself. And so we were talking about just kind of the stress of the wedding and everything that goes into it. And she's like, you know, now everybody wants a theme for their wedding and it's so exhausting. And everybody has this glamorous view of a wedding planner. And you know, and I pictured myself absolutely freaking out and upset with the florist because she sent the wrong flowers and just, you know, going nuts. And so I just looked at her and I said, what if you can do both on the same day, like engagement and marriage in the same day? She was like, that's crazy. How would you do that? And I was like, I don't know how I would do it, but I just pictured it being extremely spontaneous and just kind of two celebrations at once. To be honest, I never really thought it through enough to consider, hello, the fact that the groom would have to plan the wedding. It was just kind of, I thought it would be a really fun day. So I said that to her, and I think I mentioned it to one more friend after that, about a month later. And then after that, I just kind of brushed it off. I didn't think it was ever going to happen, but little did I know that Ryan had already started the process of planning. So I have to say I had probably the most stress-free wedding any bride has ever experienced in their life. It was, everything was taken care of. Never had to call a florist or anything. So it was great.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And like I said, folks, you got to hop over to our blog where we will link you to that documentary if you haven't seen it already. Also, the book is The One, An Amazing Love Story Starts With You. I've been talking to Ryan and Amanda Leake. Very fun to meet you guys via phone. You guys, thanks for sharing a slice of your story, a little bit of advice from where you've come thus far. And there's a lot more in this book, folks. So thanks much to you too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ho, 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 ho,
ho, ho, ho, ho. Until you stop bleeding, until you stop breathing, until your heart stops kick drum beating. When it's hard times, when it's long days, and the enemy is right up in your face, when your back's against the ropes and you're feeling all alone, keep fighting the good fight. Keep letting your light shine, 'cause I'm never gonna leave you, always gonna see you through to the other side.
Hey everyone, as we close out the show, we're going to bring up a question that one of our listeners asked, and Candace is here to answer it. Hey, Candace.
Hey, Lisa. Good to hear your voice. Glad to be with you today.
Yes, as always. All right, well, you got to help out this girl, because she is saying, how do you communicate to a guy persistently asking you out to events with his friends that you're really not interested in without hurting his feelings? He's nice, but around 20 years older than me.
Well, the first thing you have to do is stop worrying about how he feels. It's not your job to make him feel any certain way. It is your job to respond to what he is proposing. The guy's job is to risk. The woman's job is to respond. And you are absolutely appropriate to say, no, thank you. I am not interested. And honestly, the 20-year gap just puts me almost over the edge, Lisa. It's creepy.
Yeah.
One time should be sufficient. A very firm, no thank you, I am not interested, is all she needs to say. And if he continues to ask, she just needs to get some help, preferably from a strong, wise, godly pastor who pulls this guy aside and says, look, leave her alone. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, this is just, I think it crosses the line. And the fact that she's worried about hurting his feelings suggests to me that she is not self-aware of the danger she could even be in, and just the inappropriateness of the whole situation. So she's got to stop worrying about how people feel, and don't fear man, fear God, and get some help. She just needs an older, wiser man. And, you know, maybe her dad could do this, but her pastor, an elder from church, someone that is looking out for her, that she respects, needs to get in this guy's face a little bit and say, buddy, you got to back off. This is not okay.
Yeah, I know the age difference does concern me as well. And it makes me wonder if really she has said yes once or more to, you know, preserve this guy's feelings. So now he feels encouraged, you know, and I always think of, you know, the guys I talk to when they're like, no, just tell it to me straight. We don't get hints. We don't get, you know, if you're saying one thing but doing another, that's very confusing for us. Just tell us. We'd rather have the hard truth delivered on a, you know, very straightforward, in a straightforward manner.
Yeah, and if she's saying, hey, I'm not interested in that particular event, to try to preserve his feelings, that's exactly what she's doing. She's encouraging him to keep trying.
Right.
And so she needs to be firm. No, I am not interested in doing anything with you.
Yeah, like ever. Like ever. But thank you. Yeah. Okay. Well, that is great. That's great advice.
She doesn't need to be mean.
Right.
But she needs to be firm.
No, absolutely. Great advice, Candace, as always. And so hopefully she'll take it to heart and maybe send us an update about how that goes, because I think that would be helpful. All right. Awesome. Well, folks, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. In the meantime, make sure you are telling your friends about the show so that they can start listening as well, and hop over to our blog so that you can comment on the show and let people know what you think, especially if you've been through a similar scenario as any one of our segments has described. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.